send us questions that you want us to put on our question and answer session. We have a stack building up. We also could use some stories. So any yeah. story that's relatable to any of these topics, just send it on over. Back mm-hmm. to Cytotech.
Yeah. Okay, back to Cytotech. This is also known as misoprostol. I think that's how you say it. So this is a medication yeah. that is approved to lower the risk of getting a gastric ulcer or gastric ulcers in people who take NSAIDs.
Hi, I'm Rachel, owner of the Natural Birth Site, certified birth doula, childbirth educator, and midwife's assistant.
And I'm Tiffany Nunez, certified birth doula, lactation counselor, and midwife assistant.
Here, you'll learn all about different aspects of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum.
Remember, none of this information should take the place of your care provider and is not medical advice.
Birth is not a medical emergency.
Thanks for listening.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Natural Birth Talk. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Rachel.
And today we are going to continue on with our intervention series. Today, though, we are going to talk about more medical methods of labor induction and labor augmentation. So we'll just kind of get right into it. So we're going to kind of review again, what is an induction of labor? So according to ACOG, labor induction is the use of medications or other methods to start labor before the body has gone into labor on its own. Some moms may require an induction. Mm-hmm. And a requirement for an induction would be like some sort of major health condition. So like preeclampsia, uncontrolled gestational diabetes, true intrauterine growth restriction.
Yeah.
You know, there are other reasons that mm-hmm. women are given for inductions, kind of
right.
you know, like the estimated weight of the baby, maternal shape size, mom's age, race, mode of conception, like IVF or IUI, yeah. the provider's fear of being yeah. sued, which is super sad and silly.
Well, the provider would never give that as a reason.
Well, no, but like that's why
we know it is.
Right. Convenience for both the provider and the mom.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, none of those reasons are evidence-based or backed by current research that we have
right.
as reasons why people should be induced.
Well, and talking about gestational diabetes, who did we just get to talk to?
I was totally fangirling the whole time. We just did a whole episode with Lily Nichols. I'm dying.
It was so fun. So we've had her on before and she's going to be on again. We'll probably release the episode in March or April. So we're super Yay. Excited about that.
For that because it was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. So good. A lot of like practical tips for gestational diabetes, like for simple sure. things to look out for that I think even Tiffany and I didn't even fully think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that'll be a lot of fun. And you just said gestational diabetes, so I had to bring it up.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, I mean, I agree. So back to induction though. So like we talked about last time, there are risks for both induction and augmentation. Mm-hmm. You know, natural methods included, like we talked about last time, there is always some potential for these, all of these methods to potentially cause issues. Anytime we're making our body do something it's not quite ready to do, there could mm-hmm. be potential repercussions. You must always weigh the benefits versus the potential risks of doing yes. these methods.
So and to know the full set of risks, because most absolutely. Doctors will not give you the full set of risks either because they don't know or they don't want to tell you.
Right, exactly. And we're going to really dive into that when we get to the second, you know, the later half of this episode. Yeah. But with any induction, there are risks. So you run the risk of having a more painful labor, a longer labor. There is the risk of infection. There's the increased risk of having to have a cesarean section, uterine hyperstimulation, and then uterine rupture for mom. Because oftentimes medications are used for induction. Those medications can cause much stronger contractions, mm-hmm. which has the potential to cause issues with baby's heart rate during labor. Also, breathing issues for baby, infection, feeding issues, which nobody ever really talks about. Mm-hmm. And then anytime you're starting a labor that hasn't started on its own already or speeding up a labor, mm-hmm. It's very common that it can cause the cascade of interventions. And the cascade of interventions is just this idea that using one medical intervention can lead to another intervention, which can lead to another intervention, and so on and so forth.
Yep. And it happens a lot. That's not even like a could possibly tiny chance.
It's going to happen. Right. And we'll talk about that again, like in the later part of this episode, when we start introducing, you know, these medications, it mm-hmm. just is the way it is.
Right.
So, but we'll talk more about that in a couple minutes. And then what is augmentation? Augmentation is the speeding up of labor when a woman has already went into labor on her own. Mm-hmm. Somebody might need that if your provider says that your labor isn't progressing fast enough. I'm using air quotes.
Right.
Yeah. What the AKA hell does that even mean?
Right. They're just impatient.
Right. Prolonged labor. If your membranes release before labor begins, you might, you know, it might be recommended to augment labor. Again, there are risks associated with labor augmentation. The most common one is infection with certain methods.
Yeah.
Uterine hyperstimulation. And then there's always this idea like, well, what if your body just wasn't ready to go into full-blown active labor yet? And that's okay.
Yeah. Or your baby wasn't ready too. And then baby shows signs of distress. Like,
yeah. Okay. So the specific methods that we're going to talk about today. So we're going to talk about cervical sweep or membrane stripping or whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Foley or Cook catheter, amniotomy, Cytotec, synthetic prostaglandins, and then Pitocin.
Sounds good.
So the first one is a cervical sweep, a stretch and sweep, membrane stripping, membrane stretching. There are like all of these different terms for essentially the same procedure. Mm-hmm. So this is where your provider inserts their finger into your vagina up towards your cervix. They take their finger and separate or sweep your bag of membranes from the top of your cervix. Mm-hmm. So this can only be done if your cervix is open.
Yeah.
Something to point out is this could be done with or without your consent. So mm-hmm. if you're getting like a cervical exam, I've heard of providers doing this without telling you that they're going to do it.
Yep.
But the idea behind this is that when your cervix and your membranes are quote unquote separated, it stimulates the production of prostaglandins, which in turn potentially will stimulate labor, the start of labor. Yeah.
Well, and I always say too that it irritates like the uterine wall, which can cause like contractions sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So the research that we have available right now is if your membranes are stripped at 41 weeks, it does lower your chance of needing an induction at 42 weeks. It can decrease the length of pregnancy by about 4 days, we think.
Yeah. There's no real way to know for sure.
Yeah. Right. Because how do we know that those people weren't going to have their babies anyway?
Right.
It lowers your chance of needing like a formal induction with medication. The unfortunate part of this is that about 70% of women found this procedure to be painful and extremely painful at that, not just like uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Afterwards, it is very common to lose like chunks of your mucus plug and have bleeding after the procedure. Your cervix is very vascular. So anytime we're, you know, manipulating that, it pops those blood vessels and causes bleeding.
Yep.
It can cause uterine contractions that aren't labor contractions.
Yeah. And or this is even, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, this is what I see most commonly is
afterwards,
women will start to have contractions for the next, you know, 8, 12, 16 hours. Mm-hmm. And then they just kind of stop and go away.
Hey everyone, Rachel Manns here. And today I have something I'm thrilled to share with you guys. Imagine having a treasure trove of informative, entertaining, and empowering video content about the journey to parenthood right at your fingertips. That's exactly what you get with Informed Pregnancy Plus. For less than 25 cents a day, that's a quarter, guys, you'll gain access to a vast subscription library filled with documentary films, web series, mind and body fitness programs, workshops, and courses covering fertility to parenting and everything in between. Designed for new and expectant parents, as well as pregnancy and birth professionals, Informed Pregnancy Plus is like having a trusted BFF and doctor in one, guiding you through every step of the path to and through parenthood. A few of just my favorite titles are obviously The Business of Being Born, Empowered Mama, Belly Dance for Birth, How Fun Is That?, Ease into Sleep, The Afterbirth Plan, and The Core Connection, an extremely well-presented and informative workshop teaching you about your core and pelvic floor and how to keep them healthy. And here's the best part. For a limited time, you can gain full access absolutely free. Just visit informedpregnancy.tv to sign up. Sign up for Informed Pregnancy Plus right now. I'm not kidding, guys. It's really going to help you out. It's my prescription for your informed and empowered parenting journey, all from the comfort of your home. Visit informedpregnancy.tv. That's informedpregnancy.tv, and the link will be in the description below. Now back to the show. Yeah, and even like a heavy pressure down below too is something that I personally experienced. Cause I had membrane sweeps with my first two. Back then I considered a membrane sweep a natural induction method.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I do not.
Right. Yeah. There's nothing natural about it. Yeah.
Right. Right. But it did work. Like I went into labor within 24 hours both times. Mm-hmm. And I was only 38 weeks, but usually like I don't ever. And
wow, I'm surprised that they did them at 38 weeks. That's so early.
Yeah. My midwife did it because she was like, well, it's not going to work. Like if your baby's not ready, like, and we can do it. And I had asked her. But I will say my third baby, I did not have a sweep and she was past 40 weeks. So she was also a girl versus a boy. Who knows? Yeah. But like it can work. I would never recommend a 38 week sweep now.
No,
unless you're approaching a 39-week induction for some reason.
I just had a client over the weekend who she had a midwife appointment on Friday afternoon. She decided to get swept because she has a history of going to like, well, her last baby, she went over 42 weeks.
Okay.
She was just a tad. She was almost 41 weeks this time. She got a sweep on Friday afternoon and she had baby by Saturday at like 10 a.m.
Yeah.
So in her case, it works. And in my, I don't know, Rachel, your experience might be different. In my experience, it's more likely to work for moms who have had vaginal births before.
Yeah.
I don't know that any of my first time mom clients who have had these done, it has ever worked.
Yeah. I mean, it worked for me, but I think I had had one the week before also, but I don't know. She may not have done one at 37 weeks. I can't remember, but I do think like it does work better with moms who have already had a baby. You know, and it's going to work better the later you are in pregnancy.
Yeah.
But it still might not work.
Right.
You know, it just depends.
Yep. And then also there is a 1 in 10 chance that your water will break either during or after the procedure.
That's such a high chance. I did not realize it was that high.
Yep. Yeah. Do think that's important for people to take into consideration, you know, and when I say that your water will break, it doesn't mean that your labor will begin after that.
Yeah.
It just means that your water is broken and now there's nothing there to protect your baby.
Yep.
So just keep that in mind. Okay. So the next is a Foley or Cook catheter. The Foley catheter has one balloon and that is inserted into your cervix. It puts pressure on your cervix and mechanically softens, effaces, and dilates the cervix. Mm-hmm. The Cook catheter has two balloons. So it's inserted into the cervix and then the balloons put pressure on both the top of the cervix and the bottom of the cervix. Again, this mechanically ripens and opens the cervix, typically to about 4-ish centimeters. Of course, every person's body is different. So it just kind of depends. Usually they insert it and then they have you tug on it every so often, like every 30 minutes or every hour until it falls out on its own. Or, you know, if you've reached like the 12-hour mark, usually.
I've had some doctors leave it in for up to 24 hours.
Oh, really? I never have. It's only been 12. Sometimes this is used with other methods too. So it can be used with like a synthetic prostaglandin, but it just kind of depends on what's going on. The most common complaints for moms is that it's painful, uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They feel a lot of pressure. It definitely can cause bleeding because again, you're messing with your cervix and it does have the potential to cause prolonged labor. And, you know, that's really the risk with any induction method, but specifically with this.
I have noticed just personally, if the cervix is thinner and softer when the mom gets the catheter, they don't notice it as much. And if the cervix, which kind of makes sense, you know, cervix is thicker and firmer, then I had one mom who's like vomiting almost every or just felt so nauseous because it was so intense from every contraction.
So painful. Yep.
And then they took it out and they did something else. I can't remember the whole story, but it was like 24 hours later, they tried it again. And the second time, it was totally fine, but she had softened in that time.
Yeah. Something I think is kind of important to bring up too, because I have had a couple clients who have used this form of induction for whatever reason. I feel like there's this common misconception like, oh my gosh, I'm 4 centimeters now. I don't have that much further to go. But I think it's important to say that like, this isn't a 4 centimeters that your own body has gotten you to. So it can still take a significant amount of time to continue that dilation and to induce those contractions, the type of contractions that you need to have a baby.
Yeah.
So I think that's something that you need to think about because it can take 12 to 24 hours for this method to work.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking about having an induction, just getting you dilated to 4 centimeters can take 12 to 24 hours. Mm-hmm. We still have 6 more centimeters to go. We right. have usually no contractions. So you could potentially be setting yourself up for a very, very, very long induction experience.
Yeah.
And if you're somebody who is experiencing a lot of pain with this Foleyear Cook catheter, that mm-hmm. could potentially make it even worse for you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In general, I do like the Foleyear Cook catheter because it's not a medicine. And mm-hmm. a lot of people really like that.
Yeah.
And I like that if you really hate it, if you get it and you hate it, you can have the doctor take it out or have the mm-hmm. nurse take it out. Now, you might have to push to have them take it out and try something else.
Yeah.
But it can be taken out and it's just done.
Right.
Like, there's no time frame of okay, well, you still have to be monitored for 30 minutes till it's out of your system or anything like that. Like, it's just done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like you said, it can be a very long process for some people. And it can be painful and uncomfortable for some people.
For sure. Yeah. So I looked in PubMed for some research about the efficiency of these, methods. So I found a systematic review that was completed in 2017 showed that women who used, I believe it was the Cook catheter. So there was an 11.3% risk of maternal infection, a 3.3% risk of postpartum infection. So that's after you've had the baby. Okay. A 4.6% risk of the baby getting an infection.
Is this an increased risk or an overall risk?
I believe it's overall.
Okay.
A 2.6% risk of uterine hypercontractility. I can't say that word. It's very long. In VBAC moms, there was a 1.9% risk of uterine rupture. That was 26 women out of 1,373 women who used this method.
Okay.
10.8% risk of non-reassuring fetal heart tones, 10.1% risk of fetal distress, 0.29% risk of neonatal death, and then a 7.2% risk of NICU admission.
So I'd be curious to know how much of an increase that is from not using it.
Well, all of these women were induced, so there was no way to know that because there were no people in the study who weren't induced. These were all women who were induced.
Right. And I guess I'm wondering if we could find, maybe at some point in time we could find, not right now, but find the regular numbers. Okay. What are the regular risks without induction at all?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then compare, because some of these I feel like are pretty comparable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't know for sure without looking it up.
Well, hang on. Let me just look. Hang on. I just want to look at something really quick.
One thing I did want to mention too, while you're looking that up, is that some birth centers will use this method and you don't have to be monitored or in the hospital with some care providers. Uh-huh. So some birth centers will put in a catheter and send you home until labor starts.
Yeah. Okay. So
that's choreo, interesting.
Which is like a maternal infection during labor. ACOG says that there is a 2-5% chance of an infection at full term. So I would assume that would mean any time, from 37 weeks on. Mm-hmm. If you use a Foley catheter, it's 11.3. So it's more than doubled.
Yeah, that's a significant increase.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't have time. We don't have time to sit here and go through all of these, but
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, fetal distress. I'm not sure that 10% of all babies who are not induced, go into fetal distress. You know?
But I feel 10% is pretty normal or maybe even on the lower side for an induction group.
Well, yeah, for an induction group, but not for
natural.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, okay, there was a systematic review done in 2019 that looked at the single balloon versus the double balloon. So the Foley versus the Cook catheter. Okay. It showed that there were no significant differences in efficacy, efficiency, safety, or patient satisfaction.
Okay.
However, I did find an adverse event report on the FDA website, specifically about Cook's catheters. The FDA says risks associated with the use of cervical ripening balloons and labor induction may include, but are not limited to, placental abruption, uterine rupture, spontaneous rupture of membranes, device expulsion, device entrapment, and/or fragmentation. Maternal discomfort during and after insertion, failed dilation or need for cesarean delivery, cervical laceration, bleeding, risk of preterm labor, and or risk of preterm labor and birth in subsequent pregnancies.
Interesting.
And then in that same adverse event article, there were some reports of different physicians saying that babies had flipped to breech after the insertion of the device.
If they're running from it.
Yep. Yep.
If it's like poking the baby in a weird way, they might flip because mm-hmm. they were uncomfortable. I mean, that makes sense.
And guys, that was on the FDA website. Just FYI, this isn't just stuff I made up. So
yeah, that's really interesting.
Find it. It was very easy to just Google and find that information too. So
yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting because I, you know, just like Rachel, this is one that we commonly think of as like not as medical as some of the other methods. Yeah. But this just goes to show that really any method has risks associated with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Next is amniotomy. This is the intentional rupture of the amniotic sac by the provider to either induce or augment labor, or sometimes just to insert like a fetal monitoring electrode, also known as the artificial rupture of membranes or breaking your water or breaking your sac. You know, different people call them different things. So this is done with an amnio hook. It really looks kind of like a crochet hook. That's the best way that I can describe it. Most commonly, it's done with that. There is lots of research that has been done on the effectiveness of breaking your water. So there was a Cochrane update in 2008. So this included 14 studies and almost 5,000 women. And this basically said there was no difference in the time spent in the first stage of labor. Mm-hmm. There was no difference in maternal satisfaction. And that
just for clarity's sake, the first stage is labor itself. The second stage is pushing. And the third stage is placenta.
Yes. There was no difference in maternal satisfaction, no difference in Apgar scores. There was, however, an increased risk of cesarean delivery, but however, it was low overall, like no matter which way you looked at it. So the conclusion basically said, on the basis of the findings of this review, we cannot recommend that amniotomy be introduced routinely as a part of standard labor management and care. We do recommend that the evidence presented in this review be made available to women offered an amniotomy and suggest that it may be useful as a foundation for discussion and any resulting decisions made between women and their caregivers. So a reason why I see that this is commonly recommended is to speed labor up. What were you going to say?
Well, then that's what I was going to ask. Were they looking at this for induction of labor or for augmentation of labor?
They were looking, I believe, at augmentation of labor.
Okay. Because I was going to say, I feel like I have a different anecdotal experience for induction, where if some moms go in and they're like 4 centimeters, you know, I've had some moms be like, well, just break my water and see what happens. And then labor will start.
I think it has more to do with where baby is in your pelvis.
Well, and I definitely, and if like you've 100% agree.
If you've had a baby before. I have never seen this work with a first-time mom, ever. Like, they're going to have their babies eventually.
Right.
You know, like, it's not going to, this isn't going to speed up the process.
When I had my water broken in my labor, I went from 4 centimeters to having a baby within 2 hours. And I have a history of fast labors. Mm-hmm. That's not super common. But it is common for moms to say that once their water releases, or especially when it's broken artificially, that their contractions get a lot stronger. And it's not necessarily because labor is progressing faster, but it's because that cushion from the water is gone.
It's gone.
And so that's just something to keep in mind, that it does tend to get more intense when you have your water broken.
Yeah, I also had my water broken in my labor. I had been 8 centimeters for 8 hours. And at that point, I just wanted to get it done.
Yeah.
So I had my water broken somewhere around 6 o'clock in the morning. Still didn't have it until almost 3 p.m. that day.
Wow.
So for me, it didn't, I don't think it made a difference. I do remember it made things a little bit more strong and intense, which was bad because my labor was already strong and intense. But when I look back, I don't view it as like a negative thing that I did. So, you know, I think that's important too.
Well, for sure. And what I see a lot, or I don't know, I guess this is maybe anecdotal. I don't think there's been any studies on it at all. But like, you really don't want to have your water broken unless you're like 9.5 centimeters and you're trying to get that anterior lip away and you've tried everything else or, you know, something like that. Because, or baby, if you know baby's in a really good position, because I think sometimes when we break the water, especially if we break it too early, baby sinks down in a bad position because they were already not in a great position. And then they get stuck.
Right, that's probably... Yeah. I mean, that's probably what happened in my labor. After my son was born, we realized that he was asynclitic, and that's why my labor was taking so long in general. So yeah, we probably, you know, we broke his water bag, and then that kind of just forced him down into the pelvis even further in that, you know, wonky position, and, you know, did it make a difference? I have, however, seen it be helpful. Like you said, like at the very end of labor, when we know that like a baby is imminent anyway, and mom just kind of wanted, she just wants to like have the baby. I have seen it be helpful in a couple instances where they just break the water bag and then baby's born within the next few contractions.
Yep. I've seen that a few times too. So it's hit or miss, you know?
It is. It is. So there are some contraindications. So this comes from another article I found on PubMed. So contraindications, like we were just talking about, would be malpresentation. Mm-hmm. So if baby's in a weird or wonky position, vasopressin, suspected velamentous insertion of the cord. So this can be particularly scary because we don't always know where the cord insertion site is on the placenta. Yeah. And, you know, I do placenta encapsulation on the side. So I feel like I do see a decent amount of these cord insertions. And it's scary because you never know, like, are you going to accidentally nick one of those veins? And then, you know, you have to deliver the baby like right then. That's really, really scary. Ultrasound doesn't always pick up these cord insertions.
That's so true.
Just something to think about. Unengaged fetal head. So if baby's head isn't engaged into the pelvis, that can be really scary too, because that puts you at a higher risk for cord prolapse, which is where the cord slips down before the baby's head. Again, usually need like an immediate C-section if that happens.
Unless birth is super imminent.
Imminent, right. Yeah. Or an unstable lie with the baby. So baby's been like kind of flipping from a bunch of different positions. A quote from the article says, complications are relatively few. Rupture of membranes does eliminate the primary barrier between the fetus and the polymicrobial environment of the vagina. If performed too early in the labor process, there can be an increased risk of intrapartum chorioamnionitis. Is that how you say it, Rachel? Amnionitis?
Probably.
Chorio is what I've always called it. Yeah. So it's an infection. The most common complication of artificial rupture of membranes is prolapse of the umbilical cord. This invariably occurs after the rupture if artificial rupture of membranes is performed when the head is not engaged in the maternal pelvis. In the case of an unengaged fetal head, rupture of membranes may allow for the umbilical cord to precede the fetal head when the release of amniotic fluid occurs. Mm-hmm. This will allow the fetal head to compress the section of the umbilical cord preceding the head, generally leading to fetal bradycardia, which is slow heartbeat, and necessitating emergency cesarean section. This complication should be an easily avoidable cause of emergency delivery.
Yep.
So then another part of the article says, practitioners have believed that artificial rupture of membranes can either assist in inducing labor or augmenting spontaneous labor. It is commonly felt that relieving the amniotic sac of amniotic fluid induces uterine contraction activity, increases the strength of contractions, and may augment labor by allowing direct pressure from the fetal scalp on the uterine cervix, which may assist in dilating the cervix. While these are commonly held beliefs of many practitioners, the data to support amniotomy for these reasons is uncertain. Some studies have produced data supporting the practice, while others suggest that this practice does not, in fact, accomplish any of these outcomes. As a result, meta-analysis has been performed. However, the data has been mixed. Meta-analysis seems to suggest that amniotomy to shorten spontaneous labor does not produce a discernible difference when compared to no amniotomy.
And that is so interesting. And even it says like, well, some studies support it, but a lot of them don't. And it's so interesting. Yep. And I think this is where you really got to come back to what we always say, trust your instincts.
Yep.
Trust your instincts. Because honestly, amniotomy, like in some form, I feel like has probably been around for a really, 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 really long time.
And in the articles that I read on PubMed, they said the same.
Yeah. So it's like, it's probably been around for a super long time. It's been done throughout history, whether mom gets her fingernail up in there and snags it or something, you know, so it is something that has probably been happening. And so maybe there is some intuitive wisdom that our bodies can tell us about it, but like the evidence is all over the place. So you really do have to be intuitive about it.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I've seen it work in some instances. In other instances, it hasn't really made a difference.
So, yeah, or it causes baby to get stuck.
Or it causes an infection. Yeah. Or, yeah. So really listen to your gut if you're considering, you know, this form of induction or augmentation.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to the medications that we can use to induce labor. So I just want to preface this part of the podcast to say that these next three induction methods are very efficient. They do work, but extreme caution should be taken when you're considering these.
Yeah.
These medications are very strong and have very severe potential side effects, which is mostly what we'll be talking about in this section, because we do already know that these three medications work. I also want to point out that all of these three medications require the use of continuous fetal monitoring, the use of IVs, and may even require you to stay laying down for a period of time after administration. So the first one is side effect.
Yeah. Let's take a quick pause on a lighter note and ask the audience again. Rate our podcast, please.
I like how you do that to me every time.
Follow us on social media. It's just whatever it pops in my head, Tiffany.
Yeah.
Follow us on social media at The Natural Birth Site on both Facebook and Instagram, and engage with us. Engage with us. We want to hear your stories. We want to hear your questions. We want to know your comments. Send us questions, either direct message us or email us at contact@thenaturalbirthsite.com. Send us questions that you want us to put on our question and answer session. We have a stack building up. We also could use some stories. So any story that's relatable to any of these topics, just send it on over. Back to side attack.
Yeah. Okay, back to side attack. This is also known as misoprostol. I think that's how you say it. So this is a medication that is approved to lower the risk of getting a gastric ulcer or gastric ulcers in people who take NSAIDs. So that would be like ibuprofen, naproxen, things like that. It's also approved for the use for pregnancy termination in the first trimester. It is used to soften and open the cervix. However, it is not approved for this use. The product label actually says not to be used by pregnant women, and that's because it induces your labor.
Yeah.
The FDA website says there can be serious side effects, including a torn uterus or womb, when this medication is used for labor and delivery. A torn uterus may result in severe bleeding, having the uterus removed, which is called a hysterectomy, and death of the mother or baby.
So it's basically a uterine rupture, which is like the risk, you know, that's increased when you have a VBAC.
So most commonly it can cause non-reassuring fetal heart tones, uterine hyperstimulation, fetal bradycardia, which is a slow heartbeat in the baby, and then amniotic fluid embolism, which is more rare, but it is a side effect.
Well, and I want to take a little note on that because Ina Mae Gaskin, the midwife that wrote Ina Mae's Guide to Childbirth for the listeners out there, I mean, she's amazing. Anyway, look her up. She has done her research on this. She really does not like side attack. And you can find videos where she talks about it and how amniotic fluid embolism was virtually unheard of until the introduction of Cytotec for labor induction.
Gross.
Like it was so, and it still is very rare. And I want to make that clear that it is still very, very rare, but it almost always results in the death of either mom or baby.
Which is like, really sad.
So it's incredibly rare. It may possibly be like one of pretty much its only causes is the use of Cytotec in induction. And so it's just something to keep in mind, especially because we're going to go to the next thing, which in my opinion has a better safety profile and does basically the same thing.
Backed by the most up-to-date science and research, we bring you the best prenatal on the market. Full Well is an amazing prenatal vitamin formulated with the best of the best ingredients and bioavailable nutrient and mineral forms that help to fill in nutrition gaps for mom and baby. These prenatal vitamins are tested for consistent dosing and heavy metals and then verified by a third party for every single batch. That way, you know what you are buying is truly what you need.
Not only does Full Well have an amazing prenatal, they also carry women and men's fish oil, a men's multivitamin, a fertility booster, and an amazing Nourished Nerves calming tincture, which is one of our favorites. We are both so happy to announce that we can offer you guys a 10% discount on your first order. So you just have to use the code TNBT10 So that's the Natural Birth Talk, TNBT10. The link is in the description below. You can insert that code into the coupon code box to save. Hey, Tiffany, do you have any tips for someone who pee-pees their pants a little bit when they say jump or sneeze? I'm just asking for a friend.
Actually, I have a fantastic suggestion that can be done in the comfort of your own home and was created by published researchers with a background in exercise physiology and physical therapy. It's called Tighten Your Tinkler.
Oh my gosh, silly name, but it must have some serious results.
Yeah, learn more by listening to the audio testimonial in the description or use code TNBT50 for $50 off the signature program.
Hey, listener, do you want a comprehensive yet concise and inexpensive online at your own pace natural birth education course to help you prepare for natural birth, pregnancy, and postpartum? Then check out the description below for that and our helpful products guide. Now back to the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Something to think about. After Cytotec is inserted into the vagina or taken by mouth, it dissolves instantly. There's no turning back. There's no medication that you can take to stop its side effects. It's not like artificial prostaglandins that you can take out. There's nothing that can be given to reduce the severe and painful contractions that wear on mom's uterus and potentially depriving the baby of oxygen far longer than the baby can tolerate. Alternative interventions are available to induce labor, which can be turned down, which would be like mm-hmm. Pitocin, or withdrawn, which would be like Cervidil, which mm-hmm. is usually given like via suppository. Something to also think about. I think the reason why this is given so often is because it's so much cheaper yep. than Cervidil. Cervidil, I think a dose of Cervidil is $800. Cytotec is about four. Cytotec is also given, so like one pill can be cut up into four doses. Mm-hmm. The other issue with that is that Cytotec typically isn't scored. So yep. the amount that you're given could potentially be a little bit more or a little bit less than what the woman down the hall is given.
Right.
What were you going to say, Rachel? Sorry.
And then I was just going to say that Cytotec works faster.
It does. Most which is of why the time. Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, Cervidil, which is the next thing we're going to talk about, that can take up to like 12 hours for one dose, whereas Cytotec is generally four. Mm-hmm. So yeah. doctors like it because it's convenient and it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's also, I mean, what I don't love is that it's an off-label use.
Yeah.
It's not for inducing labor. So
yeah.
Where the next two are specifically for inducing labor. So the next is prostaglandin, synthetic prostaglandins. The most common one that I hear of is Cervidil.
Yeah.
So this is a synthetic form of prostaglandins, which are hormones that are used to start labor. These have been in use since around the 1960s, mm-hmm. and they act on the cervical collagen to soften and open the cervix. These can be given as a gel, a vaginal tablet, suppository, any of those things. The most common side effects are things like nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, fever. It can cause contractions to last mm-hmm. too long or have them happen too frequently. Uterine hyperstimulation, which I actually have had a client deal with this after one dose of Cervidil.
Yeah.
Anytime you're at risk for hyperstimulation, then there is also a risk for fetal distress. And then also in a small number of cases, it could cause uterine rupture.
Yeah. The nice thing about this versus Cytotec is that it can be removed.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I took the liberty of pulling up the manufacturer's website for Cervidil. And I just, you know, scrolled down on the website just to see like if there was any information on the website, mm-hmm. you know, prescribing information or anything like that. So it says who should not be given Cervidil. So you should not be given Cervidil if you have experienced an allergic reaction to prostaglandins in the past, experienced unexplained vaginal bleeding during your pregnancy, which is interesting, okay. already started receiving drugs to induce your labor, given birth six or more times in your lifetime.
Interesting.
You should also not be given Cervidil if your doctor has determined that your baby is in distress and needs to be delivered urgently. I thought okay. that this was interesting mm-hmm. because, you know, especially with moms who were induced because of like non-reassuring non-stress test uh-huh. or quote unquote low fluid. They make it sound like it's an emergency
right.
and that you need to deliver your baby soon, right? Mm-hmm. But they're still giving you this medication in which the manufacturer says not to give it in that case.
Yeah.
If your baby may be too large to fit through your birth canal.
Which there's no possible way of knowing that.
But what is the reason that they give to people often? That their baby is too big and they need to be induced.
Yeah.
So why are we giving them Cervidil?
Yeah.
And then it says, what are the most serious risks associated with the use of Cervidil? So the induction of labor has been associated with an increased risk of a disorder of abnormal clotting of the blood that results in excessive bleeding immediately after birth. So this is disseminated intravascular coagulation, or DIC. So this risk is higher over the age of 30 or those with complications during pregnancy and those whose pregnancy has lasted longer than 40 weeks. In rare cases, the use of Cervidil has been associated with an increased risk of a life-threatening event to the mother called amniotic fluid embolism.
Okay.
The cause of amniotic fluid embolism is not well understood, but it is believed that some amniotic fluid or other substances can get into your bloodstream and start a severe reaction that cause heart and lung collapse. So then it says, what should I discuss with my doctor? If your water has broken, if you've had any unexplained vaginal bleeding, I kind of went over all of that. If you've had asthma, even if you had childhood asthma and have had no asthma attacks as an adult. Interesting. And then it says, it goes on to say, what are the most common side effects of Cervidil? The most common side effects associated with the administration of Cervidil are contractions occurring at a rate faster than normal and signs that the baby is exhausted or in distress, also known as uterine hyperstimulation. In clinical trials, these effects occurred alone or together in less than 1 in 20 women who were given Cervidil. So rare. In clinical trials, fever, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and abdominal pain were noted in less than 1 in 100 women. And then it says, it just wants to say, this is not a complete list of possible side effects.
Not a complete list of side effects.
I will point out a few of those things that I just thought were very interesting.
Yeah. I wonder, after you read that whole list from the manufacturer website, I wonder if that's part of the reason why doctors want to use Cytotec more too, because that list off the manufacturer website, like, that's a scary sounding list. It's not hardly any different from the Cytotec list, but Cytotec's website doesn't say all that stuff because it just says not to use it in pregnancy.
Well, I didn't. Right. And it's not approved for use in pregnancy.
So I wonder if it's like a mind game with the care providers where they're like, well, these things aren't listed on the website, so we can get away with using it, thinking that there's less potential side effects.
Right. I know, which is so sketchy.
Yeah, seriously. But so it's how some of them think.
I know. You're right. Yeah. So any more thoughts about prostaglandins or Cervidil?
I don't know if we had said this yet, but just kind of talking about what a prostaglandin is more so and how it's used is, if you go into labor and they want to induce, or I'm sorry, if you go in to be induced and they want to induce you and your cervix is firm and thick and hardly dilated, they often want to give you a prostaglandin gel before they start Pitocin because they want to help ripen your cervix before trying to dilate it using Pitocin.
Right.
So that is a really common practice. And from what I've understood, it does help to increase the success of an induction by ripening your cervix first.
It increases the likelihood of a vaginal birth in 24 hours, within 24 hours.
So there you go. So it can have a time and a place if you have a true medical induction. And I think that's the key in all of this is you know, we don't love these drugs in general because they do have risks. But if staying pregnant is actually very risky for you and your baby, then these drugs can be life-saving and really helpful. And so you just have to know how to weigh the difference.
And if they're used wisely and used with caution and not just given to every single woman for no reason.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the next is Pitocin. Pitocin is synthetic oxytocin. Rachel, do you want to talk about this? I feel like you explain this so much better than I can. I have it in my brain, but I just can't explain it the way that you explain it.
That's okay. Yeah. First of all, said it in the last episode, when that bag is hanging on your rack, on your little thing in the hospital, it says oxytocin. A lot of the time. And that is false advertising.
So annoying.
It is not oxytocin. It is synthetic oxytocin. Funny. It is Pitocin. And here's the difference. Yes, maybe at a molecular level, they are the same hormone. But studies have shown that natural oxytocin crosses your blood-brain barrier and releases endorphins. And endorphins are your happy hormones, right? Mm-hmm. Yep. If you've ever watched Legally Blonde, you know what endorphins are. Okay? They're your happy hormones. And you need those. They're also your pain relief hormones. They help your body to cope with the intensity of each wave better. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's with natural oxytocin, the hormone that your body actually makes. Studies have shown that Pitocin, the synthetic oxytocin, does not cross the blood-brain barrier and it does not release endorphins. So that's one of the big differences. And there have been studies that show that the use of Pitocin during labor increases the risk of postpartum depression by up to 33%. And the thought is that it's because it doesn't release the endorphins that natural oxytocin releases. Mm-hmm. The other difference is your natural oxytocin is regulated by your body. Mm-hmm. So if your body realizes something's wrong, it may back off of the contractions for a little bit. Or if your mm-hmm. body realizes your baby needs extra help, it'll push a higher release of oxytocin. The synthetic oxytocin that's coming through the IV, that is just on a pump. There's no mm-hmm. regulating it within your body. But the biggest difference to me is just that endorphin release. It's huge.
Yeah. 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 And again, I just want to point out it's synthetic.
Yes.
Right. It doesn't work in your body the same way that your own oxytocin works. I think that's one of the most important things. So yeah, it's given through an IV to stimulate contractions. The World Health Organization believes that the administration of Pitocin to stimulate labor is often used inappropriately.
Yep.
I would agree.
Absolutely.
So risks include risk for baby. So heart rate abnormalities, low Apgar scores, jaundice, increased risk that baby will need medical attention and have a stay in the NICU after birth. Mm-hmm. One study found that babies whose labors were augmented with Pitocin, that's augmented, not induced, uh-huh. had a 3 times greater risk of oxygen deprivation.
That's a big scary. Deal. That's big scary. Deal.
Mm-hmm. And then for mom, more painful labor. So there is an increase with epidural requests. Mm-hmm. An increased risk of hemorrhage, which we've talked about even on the last episode.
Yep.
Why that increases your risk of hemorrhage, increased risk of prolonged labor, increased risk of postpartum depression and anxiety, like Rachel just said. Mm-hmm. It causes breast swelling postpartum. So some moms will have a harder time breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. Uterine hyperstimulation and uterine rupture.
Yep.
So again, go ahead.
I was just going to say the one good thing about Pitocin is that it has a very short half-life. So it's only about 15 minutes, which means that if they turn the Pitocin down or turn it off because they notice you or your baby are not tolerating it well, it mm-hmm. very quickly leaves your system. Mm-hmm. And not immediately. So sometimes it's not quickly enough. Mm-hmm. But it overall has a very short half-life. And so that is a benefit that even though your body's not regulating the Pitocin, that it is fairly easy to regulate from the outside. And again, it's just like there's a time and a place for these things.
Yeah, agreed. I also took the liberty of pulling up the manufacturer's website for Pitocin. I feel like we can learn so much from the actual manufacturers of these mm-hmm. medications.
Absolutely.
So if you happen to look, scroll down to 4.8, it says undesirable effects. It says the following adverse events have been reported in the mother and infant. So nausea, vomiting in the mother, mm-hmm. cardiac arrhythmias in the mother, the fetus, fetal bradycardia, hypertensive episodes in the mother, ventricular premature contractions in the mother and fetus, water intoxication, which is wild, but specifically if you've had a slow infusion for 24 hours, neonatal jaundice, anaphylaxis in the mother, maternal convulsions, coma and death due to oxytocin-induced water intoxication, subarachnoid hemorrhage in the mother, permanent central nervous system or brain damage in the baby. Neonatal seizures, neonatal retinal hemorrhage. So that's like in their eye. Pelvic hematoma in the mother, postpartum hemorrhage, rupture of the uterus, excessive dosage or sensitivity to oxytocin may result in uterine hyperstimulation, spasm, tetanic contraction, or rupture of the uterus, and then low Apgar score at 5 minutes in the baby.
This is crazy. That is a crazy list. And I'm sure I know the large majority of those things are incredibly rare, but what's mm-hmm. not rare is mm-hmm. hemorrhage. That's mm-hmm. not rare.
It's like one of the main reasons why women die in childbirth is because of hemorrhage.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. even like hyperstimulation to where it messes mm-hmm. with baby's heart rate and like fetal bradycardia. It's like some of those things are incredibly, incredibly, like incredibly rare. But mm-hmm. some of those side effects on that list are common. Mm-hmm. And this is why the World Health Organization believes that the administration of Pitocin is used inappropriately, because mm-hmm. it is. It's used all yeah. the time. And you know what? If anybody listening has a story where your care provider actually told you mm-hmm. most of those potential side effects, I would love to hear about it and know who it was, because mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's going to have that story.
No, I agree.
Like, yep. I don't think care providers are not telling this information like they should. And then moms yeah. just think, oh, it's just Pitocin. Like, it's the same thing my body makes. And then they go in for this labor and they have no idea what they just put themselves at risk for.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's really sad.
It is really sad. Yeah. So, you know, these past two episodes, we've talked a lot about induction methods, augmentation methods. So I think it is important to talk about how to help keep labor safe. Mm-hmm. So number one would be just waiting for labor to begin on its own. If yep. you can, if you have no like medical reason to be induced, you know, and remembering the true medical reasons for inductions. So yes. not like a big baby or, mm-hmm. you know, any other stupid reason.
Right.
If an induction is necessary, give your body plenty of time to work. So mm-hmm. don't go into an induction assuming that you're going to be holding a baby in 8 or 12 hours. Right. I tell people if you're going to be induced, you should prepare to have a baby in like 2 to 3 days.
Yes.
Because you really want to take your time. These medications are strong and they're hardcore. And mm-hmm. we do know that they're life-saving in certain instances. Mm-hmm. But really, you should just give your body ample time to have your baby.
Yep.
Hire a great birth team. Hire a supportive provider. Hire a doula and a chiropractor and a pelvic floor therapist. Mm-hmm. You know, all of those things we know increase your odds of, yep. you know, not having to be induced for silly reasons.
Yeah.
And then one of the most, or I think also important, is actively seek comfort in response to your contractions. So don't run away from your contractions. Don't be scared mm-hmm. of your contractions. Actively seek comfort. So be yeah, active. I like that. Yeah. Be active in, you know, trying to find what works best for you. So.
And yeah. hey, read Real Food for Pregnancy. We started the episode yeah. talking about Lily Nichols. Yeah, right. We can end the episode talking about Lily Nichols, right? Yeah. Because having proper nutrition in your body throughout your pregnancy is going to greatly reduce the risk of needing a medical induction.
Right, exactly. Okay. Because it decreases your chance of gestational diabetes and preeclampsia, hypertensive yep. disorders. Yep.
Yep. One last question, Tiffany. Are the holidays a good reason to induce?
Well, I don't know. If you follow our social media, then you would already know the answer to this question. But no, it's not.
Not at all. All right. Just check in there. Thought I'd end it on that note.
That's funny.
I don't have anything else. Do you?
I don't.
Perfect. Thank you for hanging in there again. I think these next several episodes are going to be longer. It may just become a thing that instead of 30-minute episodes, we start recording 45-minute episodes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now that there's yeah. two of us, we have more to say.
We got to get the information to the people, yep. you know?
All right. Like we said already, email us or message us on our social media if you have any stories to share or questions that you want answered on our question and answer session. And we will mm-hmm. talk to you guys in the next episode. Thanks for listening.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Hi, Rachel Manns again. If you want to learn more, please subscribe to and rate this podcast and head over to thenaturalbirthsite.com to check out our online natural birth education course, birth story blog, YouTube channel, and more.